response. And there is one linguistic place for both of interlocutors. The same words are spoken by both of them. And finally, one sign, or one sound, or one image is in itself interlocutory, or if you prefer, symbolic. You know the meaning of symbolic. You have two things in the same place in this perspective. And you know that the contrary of symbolic is diabolic. What is diabolic in this mystical conception? Is the supposition or the practice of language supposing that there is an autonomy of each locutor, and that each locutor would be the owner of his or her language. It's not true in this literature. The separation of speakers is for it diabolic. And the question of the ownership of the language is the object of a permanent war of the mystical literature. It's to say that the mystical text answers with and within the very signs, words, or sounds used by the unknown speaker. And it's the reason why, finally, for example, we saw the text written by the cloud of unknowing, that the little word, monosyllabic word, may be the place of the call and the answer, without knowing when it's the call which is speaking and when the answer. Third element in this metalinguistic conception of the language, I think that the linguistic experience in a mystical text consists in listening, or if you prefer, of being attentive to words or things as spoken. And spoken by a first or beginning speaker. And the language or the conception, the experience is this behavior of expecting an answer. But what is more essential in a linguistic point of view is the fact that each word would be a call expecting an answer. But without finding it, because there is nobody listening to the word as a call expecting an answer. And the mystical use of the language is the discovery of being situated inside an already speaking language whose each element offers beforehand, in advance, a particular way for answering. Each linguistic element is susceptible to become the expression of an answer, because it's an expecting call. And what is speaking in the language would be this mutual system of signs expecting an answer or answer using the voice or the linguistic sign of a call. And what is essential is this language as a speaking and not, absolutely not a speaker, not the locutor. There are some very interesting analogies for example, in some American poets today, contemporary poets, for example, I like the way of creating poems used by David Antin, who is not, you know probably, this talk poetry. It's an improvisation. But the purpose for David Antin is not to create a poem, but just to be the witness of the poetic capacities of the language. And the language is developing its own capacities in the place offered by the poet. And it's something which is very striking in the last Wittgenstein. The fundamental method of Wittgenstein during the last part of his life was to be attentive to the language as a permanent space of surprising things created by the language itself. There would be something like that. And in this perspective, it's possible to go from a sign to another one, endless, in order to perform or to let out, to reveal the secret of all of those signs, which are speech acts expecting to become answers. But as I we saw it with the cloud of a noun, one only sign, every sign, the most elementary one, a monosyllabic word, may be the symbol of this possible generalization of a mystical recognition of the language as a speaking. It's a point of departure, but it may be the way of summarizing the totality of the experience, which may be more extended or, on the contrary, summarized in one monosyllabic sign. But there is no end for this work. There are ever other signs, other linguistic signs, which may be recognized as speaking and expecting an answer. And for revealing this essence of the mystical essence of the language, the language may be tortured by some writers in order to reveal its secret. For example, there are many very subtle rhetorical techniques for unveiling, for revealing this system of the language as a multiplicity of echoes. Or, on the contrary, the language may, if I may use this term, confess its secret with happiness. And this way of confessing your secret is the exact meaning of declarar, declaraciones, the comment, the term used by Juan de la Cruz for giving a title to his comments was declaraciones. Declarar is to say, to show my soul to an interlocutor and by a language. And sometimes this kind of linguistic confession of the linguistic secret of the language may be happy. It may become a beautiful poem. There are different styles. But what would be essential is the fact that this problematics concerns different ways of receiving signs or things as spoken by another speaker or by something which is speaking. And this way of receiving the sign is the key essential. It's a system of reception. Maybe instead of receiving, we may use another word and tell that it's a system of believing that the sign is spoken. And essentially, the mystical use of the language is a phenomenon of reception. I perceive things or signs as speaking to me. There are many interesting linguistic and theoretical consequences of this phenomenon, because it leads us into a linguistics or a semiotic of reception and not of the production. They are even in an anthropological way there would be very interesting points of departure. For example, the conception of the anthropologist George Mead calling the essential function of a human group as taking the role of the other, which is the definition of a language. The fact that your own experience may be partially forgotten for taking the place of another point of view. It is true also that this perspective of linguistic or semiotic of reception is a difficult perspective because there is no objective guarantee that the sign is a speech act, and the act of something which is speaking. And this kind of experience oscillates between, for example, love and madness. I listen to voices. Maybe there is a hospital for that. Or it's a fundamental truth. What may be the distinction? And there are many hallucinations, paranoias, behaviors, maybe fundamentally lucid, but sufficiently marginalized for being reserved to hospitals. And in the mystical literature, you have this permanent oscillation without having finally a real criterion. For me, it speaks. What may be the objective criterion? But what is essentially here is the fact that the experience of the speaking language depends on the reception. And I may just take a little example. It may be a good point of departure for understanding this way of thinking the language. You know the fact of sounds received by of a baby, received by the parent at the beginning of semantic words. It's a way of receiving sounds of the baby, and the creation of a new use of the language by the baby, because his or her sounds are received differently by the parents. And the same sounds of the baby may be used or received in different ways by the different persons. For example, there is a great difference between parents and other witnesses of the baby, the same baby and the same sounds. Different ways of receiving baby sounds. And what is also interesting is the fact that parents have an expectation of a forthcoming language. And this expectation is, in a way, creating the new linguistic capacity of the baby. And without this expectation, the perception of sounds as the first words would be impossible. And this expectation, by this way, is creating a new kind of language from the birth of the baby. And we must think this apparition and organization of a new language by a way of receiving it. And it's precisely the question in a mystical language. And if you have no expectation, there will be no language for you, or no this kind of language for you. It's a permanent statement in many mystical texts. I think that behind this very specific mystical metalinguistic, there is also a type of sociality. An historical and anthropological question concerning the ways of using the language. But another question. It would be important to specify a little more what is finally the meaning of this term speech or speak. What means speak or speaking? I think there is, maybe it will be better for to resolve this problem to the discussion. But I think that speaking is the connection between two very fundamental question concerning the language. The first one is the relationship between speaking or telling, the emission of sounds, and believing. No speech without belief. Because the belief is the introduction of the question of the other within a rational system of signs. And even if it's just one only word, there is no speech, no speaking language without the belief that there is something, someone who is speaking. And it's a fact of a belief. Is the reason why I thought it was the introduction of the question of the other within the language. And it may be more or less developed. The second point is a relationship of the language no more with the question of the other, but the question of the reality. The first postulate would be to speak is to believe. The second one would be speak is to exist. Because you know that there are many essential linguistic philosophies concerning the status of a sign. And there is no sign without a broken structure, without two elements. But for example, during the medieval period, a sign was what was essentially the fact that in this relationship between a sign and a thing, for example, you can't read a letter if it's not a material thing. But when you are reading a text, a word, you recognize through this material, physical reality, something which is indicated by this material thing. It's to say that there is a double functioning of the same material sign, first as a thing, second as a sign. As a thing, it's opaque, it's a closed object. As a sign, it's transparent, it's the visibility of something which is another thing that the material thing. And in this dialectic between sign and thing, we have a reversal movement between the medieval conception and the modern one. Until the 14th century, something like that, what was essential was a system of signs but becoming opaque as things and no more readable because of our blindness. To say that there was a movement transforming signs into things. In the 17th century conception of the language, with the logic of Port-Royal and many other systems, it's the contrary. With things, we are building signs. And we are using, and for the logic de Port-Royal it's an arbitrary social convention, we are using some things as signs. But in any rate, there is something which is broken, which is divided more exactly. And I believe that for metalinguistical and mystical use of the language as a speaking, there is also the question of the relationship between speaking and believing, and the question of the relationship between a sign and a reality. But what would be the essential is the fact that the reality is not something which would be signified by the word, but the act of speaking is a reality itself. And there is no other reality fundamentally than this act itself. Is to say that there is no question of referentiality. The language itself as speaking is the reality. There is no separation, distinction between something which would be a system of signs and something which would be behind this system, a referential world. What is a referential? It's the act itself. But the question is to recognize the sign as the speaking reality, which is another kind of division. But I think it's very important in this case to see that this kind of perspective is in its principle the way of overcoming the distinction between a linguistic structure and its referentiality. We may take more quickly a second aspect concerning what I call the musical rationality of the, or maybe the mathematical music of this mystical text, which would be a way for finding its technical organization. The first point, the first preliminary question is the fact that we saw, for example, with Juan de la Cruz, the importance of musical rhythm, repetition, and the meaningful use of this pure phonetic repetition. It's to say that the musical organization composes another level of meanings for the same text. And there is a very intimate connection between musical composition and a mystical text. So fundamentally, when, for example, I was speaking on the mystical text as a system of echoes, it's a kind of music. It's a very interesting to recognize progressively the break between the conception of language as speaking and its musical conception. For example, a very fascinating case is Angelus Silesius, the best German poet in the 17th century, where the music is a substitute of an impossible speech. Because for Angelus Silesius, the goal, the purpose, the desire is at least to listen to a speaking voice. Writing is nothing, spricht nichts, but he hopes, it's his fundamental expectation that a voice will be listened by him, but unfortunately it's impossible. There is no more voice. And the poems written by Angelus Silesius are organized on two levels. There is a semantic level, which is a very paradoxical and negative system, refusing each, for him, illusory semantic certainty or certitude. And there is a work, a negative work, on the organization of semantic systems. It's not that, it's not this very subtle negative system on the semantic level, which is, which would be a very pessimistic conception. But there is a second level, which is the organization of sounds. And it's a marvelous music. But the music is it's the equivalent of a consolation for the absence of a voice. Like, you know, there are some songs for the consolation of children. It's the same thing. The music will be the consolation for the absent voice. But a substitute, a beautiful substitute, is to say that between speech or voice and music, there are different kinds of combinations. But the fact of the relationship is inherent, I think, essential. And as a point of departure, I may take two linguistic examples. The first example is the famous, very interesting studies written by Jacobson and Lévi-Strauss on Baudelaire's Les Chats, the great poem. And I don't know whether you remember this study.